whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, oh, oh,
oh,
oh,
oh.
Oh. The sports O.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The good kind.
We're doing our sports O face.
Sports O. Yeah.
You're watching on YouTube. It's.
That's why you got to watch it.
It's alarmingly identical to my other O face.
I've never seen you. I've never seen that look on you before. It must be playoff
season. Brandy
isn't
quite used to it yet.
It must be
20
playoff.
Years of marriage. And
she's
it's
like,
alarming.
Wow, I've never seen that before. So we need to have the Chargers and the Texans game going in the room, huh?
Get your sports O face on,
that's
everybody.
It. That's it. That's it. Hey, it's Football Friday. Welcome in. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Am I going to be self-indulgent? In the beginning of the show, I will be.
Do
hell
it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
It's
man.
A good, it can filter over into the your Texans fandom.
Absolutely can.
As you golden domer.
It absolutely can. It was good night last night, man. Good night last night in the Orange Bowl is what they were.
I was thinking
night.
About that this morning. I get so angry these days when somebody's like, yeah, remember in last year's Citrus Bowl? I'm like, no, I don't. I don't. Just tell me the matchup. They've lost all meaning to me.
Kind of have. It's as I was watching, if you missed it last night, because the game did run kind of late, Notre Dame beat Penn State 27-24. If you watched the first half of that game and you went to bed, it might surprise you that Notre Dame won.
It was
a
hell of a football game.
It was a good football
game. That was artwork, man, in terms of the back and forth.
Yep.
The mistakes on both sides of the ball, but then the ability to overcome those mistakes. Riley Leonard's ability to, I'd fake his way through the concussion protocol. That Mellon took a thumping. He got hit hard.
He did.
While the ground hit him. It was a clean sack and everything, but his head hit the ground hard.
Yeah, it was funny. That was towards the end of the first half, and I can tell you on the group text, the Notre Dame group text with my buddies, some of whom were at the game, at that point in the game, Riley Leonard was not having a good game, and Angeli came in there, the backup, and moved them into field goal. He got, you know, he put them on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
You know, he moved them, so there was a little, as good as Riley Leonard's been this year, and he's not been great, but he's like just so good in situations. Good with his legs on third down. He's the best quarterback in the country in the red zone down inside the five. It just knows for the end zone kind of stuff. And he's decent at throwing the football. But a lot of us were like, man, they ain't doing crap the first half, man.
Yeah.
Maybe Angeli's kind of the changeup that they need. But whatever adjustments they made at halftime, you know, they got the 3 points right before the half. And Freeman, Marcus Freeman even said that after the game. I love Marcus Freeman. He even said that after the game. They're like, what did you say to the team at halftime? And he said, you know, look, this is a 7-point game, and this does not feel like it should be a 7-point game.
Uh-huh.
You know, they went into the locker room down 10-3, and he's
meaning, like, listen, guys, don't even pay attention to this. Not the traditional don't pay attention to the scoreboard when maybe you're up or something, or way down.
Yeah, his implication was like, hey, man, look, this probably should be a more lopsided game.
Yeah, they're taking us to the woodshed. This isn't our brand of football, baby.
But we're right here, and we've got an opportunity, and we get the ball to start the second half.
Yeah.
So let's put a drive together. And they did. They drove right down the field. And I thought I don't think that won the game for Notre Dame, but I think that switched the game. That changed the tone of the game. Like Penn State had to feel like, man, we've played. At that point, we played, you know, whatever it was, like 34 minutes of football, and we've dominated 30 of them. And it's 10-10 right now, you know? So you're right. Then it went back. And then Notre Dame got that touchdown from Jeremiah Love, that one-yard run. Mm-hmm. He's playing with a gargantuan knee brace on.
Tyler Warren showed up.
Tyler Warren had some big play. You're right. Like, this was...
This is
like,
a, was
this
that the
checked
way?
Out, like, every box it checked.
Yeah, that was that's hopefully it means good things for tonight. After a whole bunch of either lopsided or lackluster games in the playoffs. This delivered.
This delivered.
This is a good argument for a 4-team playoff.
Just to pare it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you get the seeding right, I suppose that's the big thing.
Well, because here's the funny thing about this. Like, these seeds, this is the 5, 6, 7, and 8 seeds. So the big narrative had been like, oh, all these teams that got the bye was actually like kind of a penalty in all this. And I'm like, it could just be that the teams that got the bye just weren't as good as the teams they were playing.
Yeah, I don't go for any of that. Year one of the experiment, I've been through way too many cycles of in the NFL. Oh, looks like home field advantage doesn't even matter. And then 5 years later, it's like, you got to get the home field advantage.
Yeah.
It just, these things ebb and flow. I think that, I mean, it's a, given that game last night, I think it's a good argument for, yeah, okay, yeah, it should have been an expanded playoff field, more than two, more than four.
Yeah.
And given that, I'm not making excuses for teams that are supposed to be the best teams in the land.
Yeah.
Couldn't handle an extra week of rest. Oh, dear. Nah. Yeah.
Well, if this were a four-team playoff, because I think Ohio State's going to win tonight. I think they're going to beat UT. If this were a 14 playoff, there's a good chance that the two teams that would be in the finals, if it's Ohio State and Notre Dame, wouldn't have made the playoff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like, neither of them were in the top. Yeah, neither of them were in the top. And I know that's where you're kind of going with that. Like, and I think you can make an argument that these are the two best teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that Notre Dame, since that NIU game that they lost in week two, they've been the best team in college football.
Well, they beat seven. They're 7-0 against ranked opponents this year, which is a Notre Dame record, and it's got to be pretty high up there in a lot of respects.
Yeah, well, especially these days,
even though they don't play in the SEC. So,
but
Texas, okay. Now I've taken your shade, even though it wasn't direct shade at one Quinn Ewers, and you're just casually saying like, you know, Ohio State's going to do what they're going to do.
I think they're going to win.
Texas.
Yeah,
I would. No, I'm picking Ohio State in this game.
Yeah.
But
I'm dismissing Quinn Ewers.
Yeah. Hey, well, and,
you know who else is? UT
Texas
fans.
In general. I know. I know. Well, the matchup, especially. Yeah. It's not just where they rank and how they are as teams. The matchup of the Texas offense and what they do well versus Ohio State and what they do well.
Yeah.
It doesn't bode well for the Texas offense.
No. Especially if Ryan Day, it's like in the playoff, he's finally figured out, oh yeah, I got all these wide receivers that are going to be top 10 picks in the NFL. Just throw the ball to these guys.
Yeah.
I mean,
don't overthink it, Ryan Day.
Yeah. So that was fun last night. I'm dragging a little bit today just because as I do, I know a lot of people do this, after your team wins a big game like that, it gets all of the shine on ESPN and Sports Center.
Yeah,
like
you can't just go right to bed.
I was up
can't
till
come
like
down from that high.
12:15 watching, and
it's
here's
like you're on three mini fins.
I waited forever. Like they're like, you know, there was the Marcus Freeman press conference, and he did the interview on the field on the dais there when they're accepting the big bowl of oranges for the trophy. And forever on Sports Center, Scott Van Pelt's like, and we're gonna get Marcus Freeman live one on one here. And I don't know what it took, but like it got to a point where like Van Pelt's joking about it. Like after like the fourth commercial, he's like, "Well, I think we're gonna get Marcus Freeman here." And they actually extended SportsCenter just to wait to get Marcus Freeman on there.
I wonder if Marcus Freeman is like one of those ultimate examples of that indefinable it factor,
huge
leader of men, haver of it, all of that stuff. Credit Battle Red Blog for that. I love that saying, leader of men. Haver
of it is the best, yeah.
And Marcus Freeman has all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that maybe, you know what, is kind of detached from all of our tetherings and everything as we are in college football right now, where it feels like it's the Wild West with the transfer portal and NIL. I wonder if maybe at the very least some of it swings back towards, all right, the guys who can lead young men, get them to stay at their school, entice others to come there. There's a big element to that.
Huge.
Because you're only retaining guys, aside from just being able to retain good players, actually being able to have guys in your system and in your scheme for multiple years becomes a much bigger advantage.
Huge advantage.
Yeah, just having some kind of consistency. It's that's a big deal.
Yep.
So good for him.
Could you believe the person I was most impressed with last night in that game? Mitch Jeter's old man.
Yeah, calm, cool, collected.
The kicker for Notre Dame, Mitch Jeter, who's not had a good season. He was dealing
he's
with
banged
a
up. Yeah,
he's yeah. dealing with a groin injury for most of the year, but he's been great in the playoff. I think all of his field goals so far, at least in the last two games, have all been more than 40 yards.
Yeah,
which in college is like kicking for more than 50. Like college kickers are a.
It's like the passing game in high school sometimes.
Yes. But if you missed it. Mitch Jeter's dad had his phone out filming, which, you know, his son's about to kick the most important field goal of his career. And they flash back over to him after the ball goes through the – they flash to him before the kick, and he's got his phone out, and he's ready to go. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this dude is calm. And then
that could have been a machine gunner. He's just like, I don't care how many are running at me.
He's a sniper.
Instead,
he's a chiropractor.
Well, it was a good advertisement for the chiropractor.
Big
profession.
Time.
I was reading it this morning.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah. He got it. Jeter got his bones all right.
Yeah, that's right. And Jeter kicks a field goal, and they flash back over to him, and he's still standing there with the phone.
Yeah.
Now, he, after about 2 seconds, puts the phone in his pocket and then leaps into the arms of people behind him going crazy. But, man, the just the even keeledness to stay and film that thing, man.
I feel like Kaimi Fairbairn's wired that way, too. Yeah. That just, you know, kickers, you want them to be that cold-blooded.
Are his parents wired that way?
I'm guessing.
Gotta be.
But as of, like, the missed extra points are kind of freaking me out.
I know,
and that kicks out of pounds and everything. I don't feel nearly as solid about, rock solid about Kaimi Fairbairn as I did in the first part
of
the season.
No, it's definitely not week 1-5 Kaimi. So Notre Dame wins last night. So let's we'll talk about that again later in the show. Texas and Ohio State tonight. Okay, so it's Football Friday. Excitement level for tomorrow right now. Seth,
it's grown by leaps and bounds. I'm excited about this game.
Yeah.
I don't feel great about the Texans pulling it off, but the achievability of pulling it off, I have 100% objectively and without bias deluded myself into thinking they've got a much better chance than the odds
makers. I knew you would. You're good at doing that.
It's the NFL. I can do that with almost any game ever. You know, there's every
That's
single
what makes
team.
It fun.
Right. Every single that we see it in the NFL all the time. It's just the double digit underdog upsets, and because every team's got players on their team that can do it. So, I mean, the avenue by which the Texans would pull it off, I feel like Texans fans who pay attention are probably 90% unanimously in agreement. Okay, it's going to take turnovers on defense, and it's going to take big hero ball from Nico Collins and Joe Mixon. Right. And then maybe any other little thing you get added in is a bonus in that. But we know what the blueprint is for this specific Texans team. It's just a matter of, all right, man, you got to pull it off. You got to deliver.
I think a winning box score from C.J. Stroud probably looks something like 210 yards passing, no interceptions.
Yeah.
And then maybe a touchdown or whatever, you know, like a touchdown or two. Like, I don't think the pathway to the game has to be C.J. Stroud throwing for 330 yards in this game. You know what I mean? I think this is a really good matchup for the Texans defense.
You know, the thing about the Chargers defense is that they play bend, don't break, and sometimes that gets a dirty connotation to it. The teams that are good at it, it's fine to be bend but don't break.
Yes.
They'll let up the easy yardage, but that makes the offense methodically march their way down the field, and then the offense has to deliver in the red zone. And that's the huge challenge. I mean, we can talk about the passing game and run game elements to it, but the Texans just have not been good in the red zone, and the Chargers are one of the best red zone defenses in the league. So ultimately, really what it boils down to is, can they be a better running team in the red zone than they have been for the entire season?
Yeah, you're right.
Like, you got to be able to. Bobby Slowik said in his press conference the other day, he's like, you can't have negative run plays in the red zone.
No,
you can't. It's bad enough when you knock yourself to 2nd and 12 in the middle of the field, but down in the red zone, it screws everything up.
Especially in the deep red zone. You get inside that 5, and so many times this year they get inside the 5, they get a false start, and now they're at the 10.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that.
Yeah, it was like a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, it was CJ in Kansas City that was making the mistakes in the red zone. You got to clean all of that up. So I think they can do that, but the other side of it too is, even as good as that first drive was for against the Titans, they couldn't run the ball down in the red zone, and they did once, but Joe Mixon had to bounce it outside.
You got to move.
They
got to move.
It's tough.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It's a Football Friday. Let's get going. Six storylines, people, trends, things going on with this game that are going to matter tomorrow. Game is tomorrow, people. And if I sound annoying bringing that up, it's only because I'm reminding myself. So.
The one time in the last 7 years that I have to worry about you not showing up for the pregame.
It's true, 12:30 tomorrow on Sports Radio 610, Texans Countdown. We do the six-pack next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, let's do this. Let's dig into some of these storylines. Texans, Chargers. It's funny, some of the stuff, the questions, the answers that I've seen coming out of some of the Charger players, we'll have it later in the show, some of the audio from the Charger side. There's been a whole lot of, like, familiarity type of questions with the Texans. Like, the Texans play on another planet or something like that from the Chargers.
Yeah.
I know they haven't seen each other, this season, but I'm hearing a lot of the answers. I'm like, they do have Sunday Ticket, you know, they do have the All 22, and
they do,
Los
but
Angeles.
There is something to be, you know,
you've seen them and you've lined
there's
up.
Common opponents go into that too, because sometimes when you play teams that have a lot of common opponents, you're
and they have none. You're right,
right. Yeah, you know, they're the Kansas City. You know, so you tend to see those teams on film even when you're not paying attention to them specifically.
Yeah,
The one thing about the one bit of familiarity that I'm actually kind of concerned about is that Shane Day, the quarterback's coach, was one of the senior offensive assistants for a rookie C.J. Stroud. And Harbaugh was asked about that, and Harbaugh kind of said, like, yeah, we'll use all the information that, whatever, no big deal. He kind of brushed it off, but man, Shane Day knows exactly what CJ likes and doesn't like and what he struggles with and what he can do and can't do and all of that. So we won't be able to know or see the effect on the field, but it's an extra little advantage.
He's
they
their
have.
Quarterback's coach, right?
He was a quarterback's coach. He's the quarterback's coach in
for the Chargers,
but he was the, kind of like with Bill Lazor, a senior offensive assistant that works with
been in the room
Stroud
for everything with CJ. Yeah. So he may know some tendencies. All right, let's get to this thing here. The storylines of people that are going to be, yes, the six pack, can number one. There we go. Home field advantage and the weekly plan. I think the home field advantage is big in this game. It's been big for the Texans all year. I think the Chargers and Justin Herbert, Seth, fit into that tier of teams that the Texans have had a tendency to make look bad during the season here. The Baltimore Ravens, I'm not that game. They are an alien. The Texans are not equipped. It's not Independence Day. They can't fight aliens, but they can fight other human beings.
Yeah.
Like Josh Allen and Jared Goff and Tua Tagovailoa. These are quarterbacks that they've made them the worst versions of themselves at NRG Stadium this year.
Yeah.
And I think they can similarly do the same thing with Justin Herbert.
Yeah, Herbert, if you go back, and he's only thrown three interceptions this year. It was the second fewest interceptions by a quarterback who's had over 500 attempts in a season ever. He's been very, very good and careful with the ball. Two of his three interceptions were when he was under duress, and he kind of tried to hero ball it, make a throw that maybe would have been brilliant if it had worked, but it didn't work out. And one of the first one versus, was it the Panthers? The Panthers, Clowney got pressure on him, and on the run, and he kind of launched into triple coverage. Ill-advised throw. It was early in the season. He only had one throw when he was, I believe he was targeting Ladd McConkey on this one, where it was just a misfire. He had a solid platform and everything, and it was just a misfire, one that he should have thrown deeper than he did. And that's about it. So in two of the three instances, put pressure on him. Yeah. He's very unlikely to make the self, the unforced error.
Yeah.
But when he has made errors and when he's been under duress, he's had some he hasn't been an efficient quarterback when under pressure. And the only two of the three interceptions he's thrown is when he was under pressure.
Yep. Here was Nick Caserio earlier this week with us talking about the vibe of the team going into this game, and gave a reason why I think Texan fans should maybe be a little more confident that the best version of the Texans will show up.
Yeah, definitely appreciated the opportunity. I think when you kind of turn the page and you get through the regular season, to have your team in a position to compete when you're playing meaningful football in December and January, it carries a certain weight along with it. So everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us. We had a great sort of first day of preparation, first day of work. We were actually out there on a field yesterday practicing on a Tuesday, which isn't normal, but the fact that the game is Sunday, we've kind of structured the schedule, and what we found is when we work, we play good football. So the players were focused, the players had the right mindset. It's not easy because you come off the heels of a Sunday game and you got to kind of turn the page, but everybody understands what's in front of us and the awareness is heightened and everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us against a good Los Angeles team that's coming in here on Saturday.
Yeah, and I think the big thing about that is I know there was discussion on our show and in the afternoon show about what Nick meant by when we work. I think he was very specifically talking about practice schedule and load management, not whether guys were trying hard or anything.
They've
like
been
that.
In pads this week.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to that clip, that part of the conversation like 20 times by now. That's the only thing he was talking about.
It's definitely what
ethic.
He meant. Yeah.
So I think the big thing is, too, I mean, kind of factoring into all this, and I'm not going to make light of this whatsoever, but the wildfires in L.A.
I've got that here. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Shut up.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Did you revise that this morning?
No, it's in there.
I looked at it and didn't notice it.
It's in there, yes. We'll get to that in just a second. Number two. There we go. Someone other than Nico. Nico Collins is going to do what he does. You know, Nico Collins is a high-level wide receiver. The question becomes, who is going to be, if we're being honest, they probably need a couple more guys other than Nico to feel good about winning this game. But if you had to, guess, Seth, if we had to power rank the non-Nico weapons that get the Texans over the top in this game on the offensive side of the ball, because I think number two might actually be the defense when it comes to someone other than Nico going and winning this game.
Let's see. So by who do you mean Joe Mixon? Is that like synonymous with
the answer? Yeah.
I think he has to be an answer. Yeah. Like, that's the most obvious.
Yeah.
Joe Mixon having one of his games where hopefully the run blocking is better, but also he's got to be hero ball a couple times in the game.
I agree. Who's the number two receiver? Who's the second leading receiver for the Texans when the post-game show starts on Saturday?
I've kind of vacillated on this one a little bit. Because all week I've been saying, okay, Deontay Johnson's got to be that X-factor. Deontay Johnson's got to be that X-factor. Almost where in my mind I've built him up into a guy that was better than he was before he started having all of these issues. He's been a really nice receiver, but kind of inconsistent. But he does have an electric athleticism to him that's different than the other guys other than Nico. And he's got a different type of athleticism than Nico Collins. So I think Deontay Johnson, it doesn't need to be a huge performance, but it's just got to be enough that he's getting enough targets and he's threatening with his speed enough that it opens up things for everybody else. So I don't, like, for Deontay Johnson to be a huge X factor in this game, he doesn't have to have 100 yards receiving. He's just got to have enough targets that it's opening things up for other guys. Maybe Xavier Hutchinson or John Metchie have more receptions catches. or more yardage, but Deontay Johnson's just, he's got to be an actual part of the offense.
Yeah. He's got to, you're right. He may be impactful without showing up in the box.
Especially given, like, the last time we felt good or maybe there's something here about this offense was the first half in the first part of the third quarter of the Chiefs game where Tank Dell was really getting involved. So that's Deontay Johnson would be my second candidate.
All right. There you go. All right. Number three. The three best friends anyone could have: Azeez Al-Shaair, Christian Harris, and Henry Toa-Toa. The three best friends, I don't know if they're best friends or not, but they will be tomorrow, hopefully. Those three, and particularly the first two, Azeez and Christian Harris, it's crazy to think this is the first game the two of them are playing together ever.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, and I think this is the perfect time and the perfect matchup for the Texans to be able to actually be in a legit base 4-3 defense.
Right, and I think the biggest part about that for me is not even as much in the run game, even though that hopefully should make a good difference in the run game, but just the bone-rattling hits over the middle.
Yeah,
I think having all three of those guys out there and being disciplined with Azeez Al-Shaair and his leadership ability and calling the shots out there, their ability to be disciplined against the play action, disciplined and playing the responsibilities and in the passing game over the middle coming up, and you know, when Herbert takes advantage of some of the soft spots in the defense, turn it into a kill zone and come in and force turnovers, force incompletions, all that stuff. So having those three guys out there on the field, it makes them a very fast defense.
Yes.
Harbaugh or Herbert that said this is one of the fastest defenses they've seen. When you get all three of those guys out there with the revamped and renewed Henry Toa-Toa that we've seen this year, that's a lot of speed in the linebacker.
Yeah, it's going to be good, man. The status on the Chargers running backs, Gus Edwards is good to go. He was ankle, full participant in practice. J.K. Dobbins is actually the one. He's also dealing with an ankle.
Yeah.
He's listed as questionable. So those are their top two backs.
And
Ezekiel Elliott.
Reborn.
Yeah, reborn.
Back to the birthplace of legally recreational substances.
I would bet he's not even active for this game.
Yeah, I would say 50-50. I will not be surprised.
Hassan Haskins is a better player. That's their third back, Hassan Haskins. He's a better player than Ezekiel.
I think this is a classic. All right, look, we got some room to maneuver here. And he's a practice squad guy right now. He's not even on the roster.
He's definitely not playing tomorrow, though. I mean, I know they could elevate him. I guess.
Who knows how good Gus Edwards really feels right now?
Or J.K. Dobbins.
A little bit of gamesmanship going on.
Dobbins is the one with the questionable label. So, we'll see. Good point. Number four. Heat up Justin Herbert. We touched on this a little bit already in the first bullet point. Here was D'Amico Ryans on Tuesday about the Texans' defensive line versus the Chargers' offensive line.
With our defensive line versus their offensive line, that'll be the key matchup of the game. Like, they've done a really good job of protecting Justin all year. And for us, we've gotten after the passer pretty good all year. So it's going to they're good, we're good. So it's that's what playoff football is about. Like who's going to win that matchup? We'll have a lot of opportunities versus their guys. But Justin also does a good job of getting the ball out, making good decisions, as I said earlier. So we're up for the challenge.
Now, I say this knowing full well that the Texans actually lost a home game to a bad team this year.
Yeah.
Having had 8 sacks in a game.
Yeah.
So
I remember that.
But I will still say that if they win the matchup of Hunter and Anderson and others, but if we're just, you know, if we're creating the WrestleMania poster,
yeah,
with the two guys staring at each other from both sides, like the matchup. Anderson, Hunter versus Slater and Alt.
Yeah.
That's the matchup. Like if I could pick one positional matchup to win where I feel like, okay, I'm going to pick this one, and I think if they win that battle, the Texans win the game, that's it.
Yeah.
Justin Herbert holds on to the ball a lot. He holds on to it, and he's, as you pointed out earlier, not great under pressure.
Okay, the other part of it too, though, now, I feel like I've given short shrift to the return of Foley Fatakasi and then Mario Edwards and their ability to get push in the middle. Going along with all the other defense, like those guys have kind of, a lot of guys have overperformed at the defensive tackle position, and yet you still don't feel awesome about the defensive tackles. The Chargers have been, they've got a rotation going at right guard, so they don't feel awesome about their interior offensive line. There's opportunities there that could very easily, as we've seen multiple times this year, there's times where the defensive tackle pass rush has ended up being the impact moment in the game.
Yes.
Because the guys are double teaming the edges and whatnot. So there's opportunity there in the middle of the line.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, number 5, and you just touched on this. The X factor of the, I'll call it the disaster X factor,
yeah,
here. The,
yeah,
the X factor of what all is going on in Los Angeles right now.
They're moving the Rams game to Phoenix.
Yeah.
The first one that I saw was Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator, told reporters that Chargers wide receivers coach Sanjay Lal had an intense night at his Calabasas home. So
Calabasas is right in the middle of all.
So I don't know how many players or coaches or anything. The Chargers have had to adjust their practice schedule because of air quality and all that.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing you feel horrible saying, like, this could be an advantage. Like, but it's an element. It's an X factor.
Yeah, no, you got to acknowledge it. Yeah, you got to acknowledge it. And I don't think we'll know. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like watching the game, I don't think we'll go, oh my God. Well, kind of like
the Shane Day factor. Like you can't see it on the field, but it might, maybe kind of like with the Patriots when they had their flu game at NRG Stadium.
Yep.
It was a lackluster version of the Patriots.
Got to acknowledge it though, man. Yeah, JJ Redick lost his house.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy, man.
I didn't know, man, because I had that disastrous travel night the night before, and I just couldn't, I didn't realize how bad it had gotten
yesterday morning. Worse.
Yeah, we had these 80-mile-per-hour winds.
Yeah,
and,
crazy. All right, my prediction, Texans 23, Chargers 20.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the Texans in this one. 23-20, I think the home field advantage
is the difference in the game. You know what? I didn't even hear that. I transposed those two teams in my mind when you said that. You're going with the Texans.
I'm going with the Texans.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me look. Yes. Going with the Texans. Texans 23, Chargers 20. You'll give your predictions in the 9 o'clock.
It was a double whammy because I read it and just listened to you say. I read it in the show prep and I was like, oh, okay, he's going with the spread. he's calling it a push, you know?
That's funny. Seth will give his prediction in the 9 o'clock hour, as always, so stay tuned for that. Hey, gear up for the playoffs at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Thanks to our friends at Academy getting us ready for this weekend with our new Ready to Roll playoff t-shirts. The division championship hats as well. You got 24 hours to get to Academy and get all your gear for this weekend and get all dressed up for the game. Get yours at your local Academy Sports and Outdoors before this weekend. Headlines up next. We'll continue to get you ready for Texans and Chargers. We had playoff football in college last night. We've got playoff football in college tonight. More deals for some Houston Astros out there as well. Whole bunch to get to in headlines, and we will do it next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to it. Today's headlines, Texans and the Chargers. Here's the injury report. We've not gotten into this yet. We'll get into the college football playoff and the Astros and the Rockets here in just a second. The injury report, pretty clean. Shaq Mason, the only one it looks like who's going to be out. Few questionables on there, but everybody, Seth, that seems to be available on the 53-man roster other than Shaq Mason,
yeah,
is a worst case questionable and limited in practice.
Okay,
right
so
now.
As much as we fretted and wrung our hands over the 3 games in 12 days scenario,
yeah,
and I you know what, I think we were right to worry about that because it was kind of a litmus test for like what kind of a team are you actually, because the Ravens and the Chiefs, they plowed right through that tough schedule.
Yep.
Whereas the Steelers and the Texans kind of fell apart. But the silver lining there is that they, after that Ravens game, as bad as it was, at least he had kind of a mini bye week to rest and recuperate. And then because of the way the playoff scenario rolled out, you got to give a lot of guys a blow in the final regular season game. But also maybe keep them sharp, get them out there and play actual football. So the injury report in the front seven on defense especially looks as good as it ever has.
Clean, man.
And that makes me, that's one of the little kind of hidden X factors that you're not going to be able to point it out directly in the game, mm-hmm. but just the freshness and, you know, both mentally and physically might make them a better team than we saw in that 12-day stretch.
Well, when I asked you in the previous segment, who other than Nico Collins, like who's the next guy that needs to have a big game, and Joe Mixon is the answer. He's only had 5 carries in an NFL game since Christmas.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's going to be like a 22-year-old out there.
He's got to feel good, right?
Well, physically, you know what,
at this stage of the season?
You know, the nice thing, too, it's the playoffs. If Joe Mixon gets 35 touches in this game, go for it. It's the playoffs. Yeah. I don't think D'Amico thinks this way, but, man, there's no preserving. In any playoff scenario, you're always thinking in your mind, no, we're not preserving anybody for anything, but especially now with the Texans. Like, man, just empty the magazine on this one. It doesn't matter.
These are all game sevens.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
In a game seven in baseball, it's like, hey, Gerrit Cole, head down to the bullpen. We might need you.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers, whatever. Charlie Morton through the years. That's what all these games are. Yeah, hey, Joe, you're going to touch the ball 33 times today. Mm-hmm. I think he'd be up for it. I think he'd love that. All right, so the Texans injury sheet looks good. Game is at 3:30 tomorrow, 12:30 Texans countdown. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 610. College football playoff last night, Orange Bowl, Notre Dame 27, Penn State 24. This was a game where Penn State was up 10-3. They went up 10-0. They were up 10-3 at the half, and they looked dominant in the first half of this
game. It did not. The score was not indicative of how the game was going.
Yeah.
It looked like I was actually... I was at the point where I was like, I can't even be snarky about this tomorrow morning to Sean. I can't even make fun of the Golden Dome because this feels bad.
And they saved you. You didn't have to.
I didn't have to. So thank you, Notre Dame, for unselfishly winning that football game for old Sethers.
We haven't talked about how that game unfolded at the end. Notre Dame was able to get the ball back. They were driving for a game-winning field goal, and then all of a sudden, they were running the football.
Yeah.
And they just stopped running the football. They started dropping Riley Leonard back, so they had to punt the ball back to Penn State with under a minute to go, thereabouts. And it's funny, there's a clip out on the internet of what Greg McElroy was saying as Drew Aller, the quarterback for Penn State, is running out onto the field. And he's like, I would absolutely be aggressive here. I would totally trust Drew Aller. I would put the ball in his hands and... Next thing you know, I can't remember if it was the next play. I don't remember which play it was in that series, but it was early on. He throws a pick to Christian Gray. Just a bad pick where his first couple reads weren't there. They had Tyler Warren blanketed in man coverage right out of the shoot. If you look at the behind the quarterback view on that play, Notre Dame, they were great in coverage. And so Drew Aller was trying to throw the ball away.
Yeah.
And Christian Gray, who's been kind of maligned all year, like he's been the guy that gets picked on in that secondary,
yeah,
makes a big pick right there to put Notre Dame in position, and then Notre Dame gets a second chance. They had all 3 timeouts. They get a second chance to kind of game manage their way into field goal range, and they did exactly that, and Mitch Jeter kicks a 41-yard field goal, and Notre Dame's on to the title.
You know, another thing I was thinking about after that game was that, I mean, this is going to be an all-timer for Penn State fans in terms of just, oh my gosh, wow, right, we let that one slip away. These college kids, like Drew Aller, they got to show up to class on Monday.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, some schools, they got to not attend class on Monday. So, there is. Man, he's got to finish out this semester as Drew Aller.
Unless he goes pro. Like
he's a junior, yeah.
He's said he's staying in school.
Yeah.
But apparently, like, there's a lot of scouts that are putting smoke out there now. Like, hey, if Drew Aller were out there, I think I'd take him ahead of Shador or Cam Ward.
Hey, I would tell him, listen, you're at Penn State. Academics matter, man. You go get that degree in recreation, park, and tourism management. You can't, you got a Parks and Rec degree from Penn State. That's a golden ticket.
It is a very rural school. You probably do get some good internships there, I would say.
So he's definitely not going to class on Monday.
Is that his major for
real? He's a Parks and Rec major. Yeah.
Oh, man.
He's a classic. That is a classic old school football player. That's a guy who's there for football, you know?
And dude, I want so bad 25 years from now for Drew Aller to be my Forest Park Ranger when I go on a tour of like the Poconos.
Tell you a story
or something.
Now, yeah, no, he's got to take a job out west.
Oh,
he can't. He can't take a job.
He's got to get out of the state after that.
A national forest in PA or something, because really, it's going to ruin the experience for a lot. After the other thought pick. I always had, it was like, I wonder if the Brits pronounce his name Drew Aluminium. The way they pronounce aluminum, pronounce it aluminium.
Aluminium.
I would call him Drew Aluminium.
Aluminium.
Yeah, you don't even deserve the proper name for the medal.
So Notre Dame onto the title game. They'll play the winner tonight of UT and Ohio State. Ohio State about a touchdown favorite in this game.
Oh, the disrespect.
The disrespect.
I won't take the disrespect.
I'm looking forward to this.
As an honorary Aggie, I'll cross that line over to being kind of like McLean and be like, I do like it when. Because I'm not a native Texan.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me, and I don't know if it's because I want to fit in or if just whatever. I just, like, I do enjoy when Texas teams do well.
Yes.
Do I get that pass as a non-native Texan?
Sure.
That I can kind of, like, pick and choose every now and
Text
then?
Text in. I'm not a native Texan either, so we'll let the
natives
speak.
I'm totally going to lose my honorary Aggie status,
Aggies
probably.
The Aggies are going to be so mad at you.
Yeah.
Rockets win last night, 119-115 over the Grizzlies. That's a nice win on the road.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies are a good team. I mean, it's Grizzlies with Durant or with Ja Morant or without Ja Morant. They were with Ja Morant last night. He played last night in that game. And he was good.
Ja Morant.
Ja Morant, 27 points in the game. Alperen Şengün was delightful in this game. Led the Rockets in points, rebounds, and assists. 32-14-5. Jalen Green, excellent again. Another very efficient night. 11 of 21 from the field. 4 of 8 from 3. So that was good to see. Rockets, man. That's a nice Tillenbrooks, 2 of 15 in his return to Memphis.
At some point, all right, I'm trying to figure out and gauge where, as the enthusiasm for the Rockets and just the kind of the core understanding and belief in what they are as a team starts to build. You know, traditionally, hey, for a lot of people, they don't start paying attention to the NBA until after Christmas.
Yeah.
And with a pivotal NFL playoff game, a single elimination game this week or next week or something.
Yep.
I'm intrigued to see how much of a fever pitch could it get in this town?
For the Rockets?
There's an embraceability about this team,
no doubt,
that the James Harden teams didn't have.
100%.
And part of that was just because, I'm not even criticizing it, but I mean, Harden is Harden, and there were certain people who were going to have feelings about him. But, Morey was just, it was such a constantly revolving door of personnel on that team that it wasn't a homegrown team, where this is much more of a homegrown team. And then the veterans that they've brought in are embraceable guys.
They're tough, too.
Yeah, it's a tough team.
Yeah.
It's like the Rockets were unfairly maligned for their defense, even in years where they were playing good defense.
Yeah.
But it wasn't this type of defense.
No, this is a bruising type of defense.
So I'm wondering.
This is a swarm type of defense.
I feel like there might be a little bit of a rebirth in the emotional side of the Rockets fandom that maybe we didn't have even when they were going to conference championships.
I hope so, man. I miss having basketball in May. Yeah. You know,
and
in
I know
June.
I know there's people out there saying right now, like, Seth, it should already be like that. I know. I get it. I get it. Maybe you and I are partly to blame for that.
Maybe.
But I'm eager for what January and February are going to look
100%.
Like. 100%.
Yes, absolutely. Quickly here in headlines, Astros reach deals with all of their arbitration eligible players. So the big ones, Jeremy Peña, he's getting $4.1 million. I think this is his first bite at the arbitration apple. So people are like, that's really low for a guy who's won a gold glove and been this and that in the postseason. Yeah, that's how arbitration works. You don't get to the Fromber money until your last year of arbitration. Fromber's making $18 million.
Well, and like, to look at, and he's young, and Peña, he was his OPS plus last year was 100, which is the way that stat works. That is exactly in the middle. That's exactly average
definition
offensively,
of average,
right? And it'll be interesting to see this year, like just some of his curious defensive hiccups last year. I'm expecting him to iron that out. I don't think that's who he is long-term.
You know what that felt like? That felt like when James Harden would just have like three turnovers a game where he just doesn't give a crap. You know, like,
yeah, but I think with him, it might be the opposite, which is the, like, he's a young guy who cares a lot.
Maybe,
and sometimes,
yeah.
Like, I don't,
or, that, yeah, like, it just, like, it loses focus, maybe.
Okay.
Not give a, you're right. I painted Jeremy Pena with the wrong brush. Like, I think Jeremy Pena cares deeply.
Yeah.
I don't think James Harden cared about all of his possessions when he was out
there. Quick little tidbit.
Yeah.
Already on the rocks, Kyle Tucker with the Cubs.
Yeah,
no deal.
Yeah,
they're going to arbitration.
Those
so it's a devastating. The worst trade ever.
Those are the ABCs of Kyle Tucker, baby.
Yeah,
you know he's fourth on the MVP odds right now in the National League. Kyle Tucker.
Screw him.
That's just crazy. Like he gets traded over there, and like the National League odds for MVP are like Shohei, Soto, Tatis, Kyle Tucker,
and then Bregman remains unsigned. Yeah. Meanwhile, Paredes is going to have. He's got 4 years of arbitration eligibility left.
We control you so bad, Isak. We control you so bad. Fromber gets $18 million. Dubon gets $5 million. Good for you, Mauricio Dubon. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Those are your headlines for today. All right, some perspective on C.J. Stroud as we head into this game. We're going to hear from Nick Caserio on C.J. Stroud. We're going to hear from the other side, too, Jim Harbaugh. I think there's some things here that are maybe getting a little twisted when it comes to CJ. And maybe some reasons why what he's done
so far
are more impressive than he's being given credit for. We'll talk about that coming up next.